So here we are, the end of day two. How's everybody doing? People have been doing this for 2,500 years, probably longer. So there's been gatherings like this over the millennia, people coming together, practicing in very similar ways. Isn't that kind of amazing? You know, since before there was electricity, way before that. In some ways we're part of something much bigger than ourselves. And yet each of us is also completely unique. There's only one of me who sees the world from this perspective. And look around everybody else here in the room now. There's a lot of diversity in there, isn't there? We're different. Different ways of doing things, different ways of making sense of it. Different reasons for being here. Different ways we like to wear our hair, our clothes. Different ways we like to sit. I bet we all have different ideas about what awakening is. How it's going to be for us. And if we look around, we can see up there there's a poster of a Buddha figure, and then there's another big one on the wall behind us. There's a statue here, and there's not such a range here, but in the Buddhist traditions there are hundreds and thousands of different expressions of awakening. Now you get the sense that awakening is something so diverse, you really can't pin it down. And yet we need to do something, don't we? We need to find some way of practicing or exploring or making a response to our curiosity that we have about what is life and death. So in a little bit I'm going to read you a story, 2,500-year-old story. But just to say a little bit about the ways that we practice. So we've been talking about the breath a lot these last couple of days. And the story I'm going to read you is called Anapanasati Sutta, which translates as the discourse of the mindfulness of in and out breathing. And it's a vehicle. It's one of many vehicles that we can enter into in order to learn something liberating about ourselves. It's not really about the breath. It's about us. It's about entering into a vehicle, into the spirit of a tradition, in order to learn something liberating. For example, we might learn how controlling we can be. We might find it impossible to not control the breath. I don't know if anybody's had that experience. But that's not really about the breath, is it? That's about us. That we're getting shown something about us. That's one of the special characteristics of the breath. It seems to me anyway. That we have some control over it, we can hold our breath consciously. And yet we can also be fully present with our breath and let it do its thing. And yet we're challenged to see how, where we come from as we engage with trying to be present with the breath. What kind of volition and intention is required to connect with and stay with our experiment in mindfulness? So I'm going to read you the story now. Anapanasati Sutta. I have heard that on one occasion the Blessed One was staying at Savatthi in the Eastern Monastery, the place of Mikara's mother, together with many well-known elder disciples, Venerable Sariputta, Venerable Mahamoggallana, Venerable Mahakassapa, Venerable Mahakachana, Venerable Mahakotita, Venerable Mahakapina, Venerable Mahakunda, Venerable Rewata, Venerable Ananda, and other well-known elder disciples. On that occasion, the elder monks were teaching and instructing. Some elder monks were teaching and instructing 10 monks. Some were teaching and instructing 20 monks. Some were teaching and instructing 30 monks. Some were teaching and instructing 40 monks. The new monks, being taught and instructed by the elder monks, were discerning grand successive distinctions. Now on that occasion, the Uposatha day of the 15th, the full moon night of the Pavarana ceremony, the Blessed One was seated in the open air surrounded by the community of monks. Surveying the silent community of monks, he addressed them. He's addressing us. Monks, I am content with this practice. I am content at heart with this practice. So arouse even more intense persistence for the attaining of the as yet unattained, the reaching of the as yet unreached, the realization of the as yet unrealized. I will remain right here in Savatthi for another month through the white water lily month, the fourth month of the rains. The monks in the countryside heard, the Blessed One, they say, will remain there at Savatthi through the white water lily month, the fourth month of the rains. So they left for Savatthi to see the Blessed One. Then the elder monks taught and instructed the new monks even more intensely. Some elder monks were teaching and instructing 10 monks. Some were teaching and instructing 20 monks. Some were teaching and instructing 30 monks. Some were teaching and instructing 40 monks. And the new monks, being taught and instructed by the elder monks, were discerning grand successive distinctions. Now on that occasion, the Blessed One addressed the community. Monks, this assembly is free from idle chatter, devoid of idle chatter, and is established on pure heartwood. Such is the community of monks, such is this assembly. The sort of assembly that is worthy of gifts, worthy of hospitality, worthy of offerings, respect, an incomparable field of merit for the world. Such is this community of monks, such is this assembly. The sort of assembly which a small gift, when given to, becomes great, and a great gift becomes greater. The sort of assembly that is rare to see in the world. Such is this community, such is this assembly. The sort of assembly that it would be worth travelling for leagues taking along provisions in order to see. So then he talks a little bit for a while about the different kind of levels that the people are at, in a way, or the different ways people are practicing, the different things people are working on in their practice. But I'm going to skip to the bit on the mindfulness of breathing. In this community of monks, there are monks who remain devoted to mindfulness of in and out breathing. Mindfulness of in and out breathing, when developed and pursued, is of great fruit, of great benefit. Mindfulness of in and out breathing, when developed and pursued, brings the four frames of reference to their culmination. The four frames of reference, when developed and pursued, bring the seven factors for awakening to their culmination. The seven factors for awakening, when developed and pursued, bring clear knowledge and release to their culmination. Now, how is this mindfulness developed and pursued so as to be of great benefit? So this is kind of the part which is most like instructions. I'll just read this. Breathing in a long breath, one knows I'm breathing in a long breath. Breathing out a long breath, one knows I am breathing out a long breath. Breathing in a short breath, one knows I am breathing in a short breath. Breathing out a short breath, one knows I am breathing out a short breath. I am breathing in, aware of my whole body. I am breathing out, aware of my whole body. I'm breathing in, making my whole body calm and at peace. I am breathing out, making my whole body calm and at peace. I'm breathing in, experiencing joy. I'm breathing out, experiencing joy. I'm breathing in, feeling happy. I'm breathing out, feeling happy. I'm breathing in and am aware of the activities of the mind in me. I'm breathing out and aware of the activities of mind in me. I'm breathing in and making the activities of the mind in me calm and at peace. I'm breathing out and making the activities of the mind within me calm and at peace. I'm breathing in, aware of my mind. I'm breathing out, aware of my mind. I'm breathing in and making my mind happy and at peace. I'm breathing out and making my mind happy and at peace. I'm breathing in and concentrating my mind. I'm breathing out and concentrating my mind. I am breathing in, liberating my mind. I am breathing out, liberating my mind. I am breathing in and observing the impermanent nature of all phenomena. I am breathing out and observing the impermanent nature of all phenomena. I am breathing in and observing the fading of all phenomena. I am breathing out and observing the fading of all phenomena. I am breathing in and contemplating liberation. I am breathing out and contemplating liberation. I am breathing in and contemplating letting go. I am breathing out and contemplating letting go. Before I pass you over to Caroline, doesn't it seem like the breath is the vehicle here for a lot of things to happen within? Like one way of exploring a whole lot of deeply significant and interesting things. And the breath is one way in which we can start to explore and contemplate these things. So I'm going to pass you over to Venerable Caroline, next to me.
Thank you, Venerable Paul. So, I would like to talk for a little bit as well. We really wanted to present that teaching that we're really drawing on in particularly the morning instructions, and we'll put it on the wall in the dining room, so if you want to check it out, but list and refer to that, you can. It's a translation by Thich Nhat Hanh. It's very helpful, clear, and we'll go through. You may recognize the first part from what I did this morning. It's exactly what we did this morning, and we'll kind of touch on the other parts. And yeah, really to encourage you, as much as you have interest, to really embrace this mindfulness of breathing exploration, you know, alongside the walking and maybe other practices that you might have to support you, you know, the body scan that Paul did and the Brahmavihara exercise I did. You know, really that sensitivity about what's needed, that, you know, there's so many ways of practicing meditation and so many meditation objects, and the breathing is just one, but it feels to me, you know, and as I've been preparing for this, sort of listening to other teachers on this, that maybe you have a sense of maybe lots of different possibilities in deepening our relationship, our understanding of this breathing process that is with us, you know, from the moment we're born, you know, until we die. And such a intimate, close, maybe profound connection with the world around us as we exchange air. We participate as part of how we're connected with the world and with each other. You know, we're all breathing the same air. Maybe you find that slightly icky. You know, it's like, ooh, I don't know about that. It's like, It's, you know, it's like we're very close. You know, and also the sense that our life is so, it rests on a single breath. You know, it doesn't take very long, does it, for a body to die without that. So this mindfulness of breathing has so many potentials and possibilities. And in that sutta, you know, the Buddha is, I think partly, I feel like what it's done, and you can see in the story, he delivers this thing at the end of this 4 months, you know, this big deal. I mean, how many, hundreds, maybe thousands of monks and nuns are all there. And finally, at the very end of it, like the last day or something, you know, it's like. And to me, it is describing a natural process. And something that I remember years ago, my first sort of month-long retreat, first sort of getting to know, like doing mindfulness of breathing and not really knowing any of the sutta and not knowing much about meditation at all, but just, okay, you know, sat for a lot of the times following my breath, sort of not quite sure why, and well, we'll see, you know. And actually, when I reflect back, I can see the process. A lot of what was there in the sutta happened, you know, before I even read this thing. So I think there's like a natural process, and really maybe the Buddha was sort of, you know, was reflecting back to the monks and nuns. See, this is what you've been doing. Isn't this wonderful? And sort of formulating it for them in a way where they can go, and take it with them and share it with others as a way of helping to support and maybe gently guide and show how this practice can be a place of insight, of liberating insight. And so the calming of the body, you know, the first group of the teachings, and then as we move on and to the feelings and the mind and the heart, and begin to see how can we be, as I was trying to say this morning, how can we be with the breathing, very, very precise, close, gentle way, which actually helps the mind and the body to calm. You know, now that might take months and years, actually, or, you know, in all the different situations and all the different states of mind, and but to really get to know and understand, that's some very profound, very subtle, perhaps sort of causality, cause and effect, where we begin to say, what on earth am I doing? You know, why is the breathing, how, you know, sometimes it feels like this, and sometimes maybe it feels difficult, and other times maybe it feels boring, or sometimes it's so pleasant, you just sort of like, you tend to the breathing, and pretty soon you're asleep. Or maybe we have a tendency, we find it boring, and so we kind of dull out, zone out, think of something else. Or we find it difficult or unpleasant, and sometimes that's a common thing, and so we tend to struggle with it. Or, you know, get cross, or, you know, get into kind of irritation and stuff. Or, you know, again, maybe it feels very pleasant, and so we can sort of float off in a kind of pleasant daze, which is maybe quite nice for a while, but is that really, it's a bit of a dead end. It doesn't really lead anywhere. So the Buddha's saying, see, if you stay in touch in this way, you know, it's like, and be in touch with what's actually happening in the body, in the mind, and notice that, again, in the last part, he's pointing to these great revelations of the absolutely obvious, which can take so much of a sort of steadiness of mind. I remember in another retreat doing mindfulness for breathing, and, you know, sort of going along, and as a retreat does, it goes up and down and various ways, and meet blockages, and then it goes all right, and then, you know, all the whole thing that you've probably already met in 2 days, over weeks. And remember one period, sort of minding my own business, you know, just following the breath. It was about 10:30 in the evening. I was actually lying down meditation on the top of my bed, feeling quite, you know, bright and steady, and just quietly following my breathing. And a very strong insight into the impermanent nature of it arose. It's very hard to describe, but maybe you've had these moments sometimes when, you know, I say it, well, of course, the breath is, you know, an in-breath is, I mean, it doesn't stay still for a moment, does it? Where you know, there's actually no point where you could, it stops anywhere. And it was like this very direct, immediate, profound, kind of moving perception of the absolute insubstantiality of experience. That there was nowhere to stand. There was nowhere, like, you could stop. There was really no basis for suffering. that all of that, you know, how when you have insights, like you can think of a lot in like this. And this sense of really seeing that the groundlessness of our life, of our being, of our experience, where we have this sort of illusion of, you know, fixing and solidifying things, and the you know, I mean, for that insight then to really inform your life and make a difference, and that's a whole other story. You know, really, insight's one thing, and then actually trying to remember that and you know, live with that wisdom. So on. That's a whole other practice and perseverance. So what I'm trying to point to is that any moment of our practice today, tonight, you know, any moment can be a moment of profound awakening. You really don't know when it's going to pop up. Yeah? You really don't know. And in terms of this teaching, it's not like we have to go through all the 16 stages and then like, okay, where's the... It's like, come on, wait for the insight to come, like waiting for the bus. You know, right, I've done my thing now, come on. It doesn't work like that. It's like it's as we contemplate the body, you know, the breathing, as we contemplate our feelings and the changingness of that. So that there's different kinds of insight into impermanence, into the insubstantiality of things, or into the lack of there really being a person who owns any of this. Beginning to really see that, like, there isn't anybody doing this. Breathing is happening. Where is the breather? And sometimes we can really begin to kind of, you know, open to that, sense that there's a missing person here. So, I suppose just wanting to kind of really point to the vast and huge and deep and rich benefits of this practice, both in terms of healing, of establishing calm, samadhi, gatheredness of mind, where insight and deeply seeing things that really free us from suffering, where they can really arise, but that it's not always, it's not simple and easy. And I think this is really important, and that any meditation object that you choose, and there's obviously lots of ways you can practice and meditation objects you can use, but the likelihood is anything you choose, you will meet very similar problems. You will meet your mind, you will meet the hindrances. You know, you will meet the forces of confusion or irritation or what are we doing, or, you know, all the different kind of ways that we, you know, and we need to go through those things. It's like we need to ask the questions, and we need to, because in a way that's, that's the... That's the mind that wakes up. No, it's not some other mind. It's this very this very close, immediate, you know, mind in all its variety, all its expressions. That's is the place of seeing, the place of liberation, and place of healing. So I hope some of that makes sense. I'd like to say a bit more, but then I actually want to make some time for questions, because I would really like to encourage you to to ask, you know, any questions that you need to ask that will help you to engage more fully with the process here. But before I do that, I just wanted to add a few, open up a little bit the creative sandpit or playground of exploring the breathing. That, you know, without getting into complexity and proliferation and kind of messing about, there's definitely a really important place, and some teachers emphasize this very much, but I think I've really found it to be true in my experience, that there's a real need for a sense of experimenting and being creative in how we work with the breath, how we engage with it, because I think that the breathing in our relationship to it often reflect and express the habitual patterns and ways that we operate in our life. Yeah, often a lot is quite unconscious, and so we don't even realise we're breathing in a certain way. So, for example, one of the ways I would encourage you to sort of look and see, one of the things I've discovered is that the breathing pattern can actually, I think, well, I'm just breathing, but actually there's a very specific way that the breathing is being perceived or conceived, that with my attention, it's just like I'm kind of feeling it in a certain way. I've kind of, in a way, created a kind of a particular shape, a space for it in my body and my mind, if this makes any sense, if you feel this. And so actually I'm breathing kind of like, for example, like this, like kind of diagonally from, I mean, that sounds a bit strange, but if you start looking at what you're doing, it's quite interesting. So what you can play around with is, what happens when you place your attention, say, in your feet, and let that be kind of like an anchor point for you, and see what it's like to breathe with, in a way, you're kind of with your feet being involved. It might feel very strange, but it's what it starts to do is to reveal how you're holding yourself, you know. And like, as Paul was indicating, this is very kind of expressive of perhaps a lot of the sort of thoughts or beliefs we've held about ourselves. But we don't necessarily have to get into that. We can go into it sort of through the body and sort of loosen all that up. So playing around with it on that level, I think, is very, even quite small. You'd be, oh, right. Oh, you know, playing with the imagination, like imagine breathing in and out through your legs or up from the ground and down into the ground, which is sometimes really helpful if your energy tends to go really up and be up in your head. It's like breathing down. This can really be so, so helpful. Or if you're the other way and you tend to be like, you know, kind of a bit sort of earth down and sleepifying, you know, then breathe, find out how does it, you know, breathing as if you're kind of like, it's air kind of flowing from the mountains, say, down through your head and then down to the sea. I mean, you can be creative. Like, one thing I picked up, which was lovely, is you can pick up on that gentle rhythm of the breathing and imagine it's like waves sort of, you know, crashing on the beach and then receding, crashing on the beach and then receding. And also picking up on images or things that help it to feel what you need it, you know, what you need. So for example, if the breath feels very boring, what makes it feel interesting? Or if it feels kind of uncomfortable, you know, what makes it feel a bit more comfortable? Or if it feels too comfortable, you know, what helps you to feel a bit more kind of sort of awake with that? So you can experiment, use your imagination. You can also you know use similes to describe how the breathing feels like when it feels like, you know, I'm in a courtroom being judged by 10 judges. Be creative. Or when breathing, it feels like, you know, a really muddy puddle with mold on the top of it. So you can be creative in that way, because also that's engaging the kind of thinking mind and kind of bringing it together. So part of what we're looking for in any meditation is a sense of bringing together, unifying mind, body, heart, unifying sense of the thinking mind, the heart, the feeling part of us, and the body. So finding creative ways to do that. There are lots of different possibilities. I won't go on too long, but one thing I've found useful, sometimes I get a lot of, I don't know if other people do, a lot of difficulty, kind of anxiety or different stress that's expressing itself in the breathing. You can't seem to quite come out of that. That I can sometimes imagine or feel or picture what I call little breath that's happening kind of underneath or behind all this other stuff that's going on. And I can tune into little breath, and little breath is fine. Little breath is just like going along, not having a problem. So little breath is a really good friend. And sometimes the other stuff is loud and it calls for you and it feels very compelling. But do you see what I hope this is making some sense, that if you do want to explore in that way, it can be part of what's kind of opening this breathing up as a place of real joy and interest and play and healing. So I know for myself I find it difficult. Sometimes my breath gets really weird and needs a lot of patience, you know. But there's that sense that there's so much potential there. So many, many, many other things that could be said, but hopefully maybe during the week we can drop in more suggestions, and also during the groups and interviews, if you're interested, you can ask more about sort of that part of it. Maybe for my little bit now, before we open this up, I would just like to read to you one bit that I love about the breathing as a meditation, from a very beloved teacher called Ajahn Sumedho, who was till recently the abbot of a monastery in England. And this is something that he said, and then it was written down, about the breathing, mindfulness of breathing practice. So he says, when we are with the breath, our minds are not thinking about other things. So we are just with the breath. And if we keep with the breath, then our minds will calm down. Breathing, just ordinary breathing, is a calming kind of rhythm. We may not realize that each moment with the breath is a tranquil one, so we tend to get caught up in trying to acquire something, in trying to get more from it than it can offer us. So we miss the actual result as it's happening. Okay, just one more part. So we maybe are not really giving ourselves to it. We're just using it to get some state that we want. But while we're concentrating on that, being aware of it, our minds for that moment are calm, even though our bodies may not be. But the more we calm the mind, the more the body calms. From just little things like this, tremendous wisdom arises in our life. So, to me, it's like that invitation to find out what it might be to really, really wholeheartedly give ourselves to our meditation practice, and to give ourselves to the experience of this breath, now, this moment. So, pause there, and please do feel free, if anybody has any questions at this point, there may not be any, but do feel free to, anything you might want to say or ask.
Yeah. Will you repeat it, please, the little breath? I just didn't get along.
Okay, right, little breath. So sometimes our breathing can feel difficult because it's picking up perhaps on an emotional pattern, emotion, and so there can be quite a strong feeling, sensation of the breathing, and maybe the body quite, you know, contracted or sort of, you know, activated around that. And what I'm suggesting is that you can kind of pause and notice that's happening, and then locate a sense of a little breath, a more gentle breath that's actually happening perhaps deeper in the body, like below that trouble or behind it. Kind of, I tend to locate it down, it's sort of in there somewhere. And then if you just tune into that, something quieter and gentler that's happening alongside the trouble, you can tune into the quieter part, and it helps the whole thing kind of calm down. It gives you a place to sort of be with the trouble from. Does that make sense? Thank you.
Is it possible to do breathing exercise when you are, for example, walking? I tried it today, and I found it much more easier than sitting.
Great. Yeah. Yeah, definitely. However, you, and there'd be various ways of doing that, coordinating the breathing with the walking, but it sounds like you found a way that worked for you.
Yeah.
Great. No, really encourage you to do that. And yeah, I think I've experienced that. And so, and it, just one little thought about that, that if it's easier when you're walking, that you kind of enjoy that and sort of learn from that, because sometimes there can actually be, okay, so what's making this easier? And actually there may be something from that that you can actually bring into the sitting. I don't know what it would be, but there might, it's like you sort of notice. It's not just the walking, it's something that's happening a bit, and then that you can bring, and that will help you a bit more with the sitting. Thank you. Great. Again, it's always in the spirit of what's productive of sense of easing or, you know, supporting. So kind of trying out and you know, feeling what's helpful. But yeah, I mean, I think, again, you just have to be a little bit watchful that it doesn't sort of take over, you know, but that's true of anything. But yeah, I think, so does everyone understand that? It's actually playing with the sort of physical, like making the actual breath deeper. I think there is, you know, there is a place for that sometimes. Yeah, and sometimes it can be helpful to do the deeper thing for a while and then just go back to being how it just is naturally. And also sometimes I think I could see myself, there can be a tendency to over-breathing. You know, where you're trying, that's a good breath, right? Really, it's like, oh God, And you don't realise it's actually feeding a lot of agitation and over-energising. And actually, again, letting it be small can feel a bit strange. Is that okay? Is that good breathing? And actually, again, the test is always the same. It's like, is it helpful? And that in itself is a real training, isn't it? Because like, in order to really discern what's helpful, we're having to come out somewhat of our ideas about what we should be doing. What, you know, a good meditator never messes with the breath. You know, just leave it as it is. Or some image of what a really good breath is. You know, it's going to be really sort of grand and large. But no, it may not be. It may be very small. And it may be sometimes very jagged and bumpy. And maybe actually that's what's needed, which is kind of interesting. It's almost like we may be trying to make it really smooth all the time. And actually it needs a little bit of room to be a bit, you know, irregular. So it's great sensitivity. It's like nobody can really tell you from the outside, but giving yourself permission to, you know, to experiment without scaring the person next to you. Does that answer your question? Thank you. Anything else? So, thank you all for your attention, and let's just sit quietly together for a minute before we go for our walking. You can just stay where you are if you want.